no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com.
NBC presents Short Story. Tonight, Conrad Aiken. A story by a Pulitzer Prize winner, the man who holds the chair of poetry at the Library of Congress. He's poet, teacher, sometime tennis reporter for the New Yorker magazine, Conrad Aiken. He deals tonight with an operating table and a strange, far journey, which will be heard immediately following this communique from the United States Marine Corps. Literally translated, esprit de corps means spirit of the corps. And in this country, the expression is most often used in referring to the United States Marine Corps. The United States Marines have an esprit de corps based on pride of outfit, confidence in fellow Marines, and respect for Marine Corps tradition, all vital ingredients in an outstanding military organization. Certainly one of the most distinctive characteristics of every Marine is this feeling of pride, and a natural outgrowth of pride is confidence. When men have confidence in themselves, their comrades, and their leaders, they become welded together into an unbeatable team. The United States Marines owe much of their success to their esprit de corps. Here now, Mr. Arcularis by Conrad Aiken.
Hello, John.
Oh, there you are, Kurt. Nearly let your seat go. Thought you weren't coming.
No, I didn't intend to. Not till I heard old man Venner's going to tackle an advanced mitral today.
What?
Mm-hmm.
Advanced mitral? Poor guy is practically signing his own death warrant. What's his name?
His name is Arcularis. Arcularis.
Rum sort of a name.
Yes. And I gather he's a rum sort of a fellow. All kinds of money, no wife, no family. All alone in the world.
How come you're so well informed?
I've been taking an interest in the girl who's been nursing him. Oh. Little Miss Hoyle. And I've been getting precisely nowhere. She's far too wrapped up in her patient, her precious Mr. Arcularis.
There, Mr. Arcularis. You'll feel better in a moment when the injection begins to take effect.
Thank you, Miss Hoyle. You're very kind to me. Patient. Will they be coming for me soon?
Very soon.
Miss Hoyle.
Yes.
You won't leave me, will you?
Of course not.
Stay with me. Take my hand and stay with me.
Your attention, please. Today, we're going to have the privilege of watching Dr. Venner operate on a case of advanced disease of the mitral valve of the heart. Our thanks are due not only to Dr. Venner, but to the patient who, in the interest of medical science, has consented to have the operation take place here in the lecture theater.
I thought you said the patient was quiet.
He was, Doctor, for a while, but...
He's had an injection, of course.
Yes, Dr. Venner.
All right, I'll try to quiet him. Mr. Arcularis, listen to me, Mr. Arcularis. You're going to be all right. You're going to be perfectly all right. So don't worry. Don't worry. Check him, please, Mitchell.
Seems all right.
Pulse?
90.
Blood pressure?
140 over 83.
All right. Let's begin.
Good morning, Miss Hoyle.
Good morning, Dr. Mitchell.
Where's your patient?
He's in the bathroom, Doctor, dressing himself.
Getting dressed on his own, eh? He must be feeling pretty well.
He's still very weak, Doctor.
That's to be expected. Rather a pity he has to set off on this trip alone.
I wish I were going with him.
Oh,
Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Mr. Ocularis. And how are we feeling today?
Oh, not too bad, considering. Trifle unsteady on my pins and a bit fuzzy in the head, but I...
Perhaps I'd better drive down to the dock with you.
Oh, thank you. It won't be necessary. An old friend is going to take me down in his car and see me safely aboard.
Good. But don't forget, you must take it easy.
Oh, I will. Goodbye, Doctor.
Goodbye, Mr. Ocularis. And bon voyage.
How strange and vivid the world looks from my window, Miss Hoyle.
It must to you today.
It looks as if it had been made freshly for me. So our musician friends are back.
How nice of them. They've come to give you a final serenade.
Well, I must say, I'd rather they hadn't.
Why, Mr. Ocularis, I thought you liked their music.
Not this tune, Miss Hoyle, not this tune. It reminds me too much of my mother, my very pretty and very wicked mother who died young. Still, they do look rather nice standing down there on the wet sidewalk. Oh, it's all so wonderful after the shower. Innumerable green fresh leaves blowing and turning. And the sky strung with rain like a harp, every raindrop sparkling. I feel I don't want to leave it. I don't want to go.
But think of all the wonderful things you're going to see while you're abroad.
Oh, yes, yes. A sea voyage, Paris, Switzerland. A long time since I've seen them. Yet somehow I'm homesick already, homesick without having left home.
Is that perhaps because you're going alone?
Yes, perhaps it is.
I do think you should have someone with you.
You, for instance?
Oh, Mr. Ocularis. There, that must be your friend. I'll let him in.
Harry.
Well, if it isn't the same good old Ark. How are you, fella? You look swell. Oh,
fine, thanks, Harry. It's good of you to come.
Well, how does it feel to be back on your feet again, you old sinner?
Oh, wonderful, Harry. Simply wonderful.
Ah, the same good old Ark.
No, not quite, I'm afraid.
Say, are you sure you're really up to this trip?
I mean... Oh, absolutely. I've been checked out by the doctors. And we better go.
Steward! Steward!
Yes, sir. Coming, sir.
Steward, two double whiskeys.
Right away, sir.
As I always say, there's no bar like a ship's bar, eh, fella?
Yeah, but it's too cold in here. I can hardly keep my teeth from chattering.
Your whiskey, sir?
Yeah. Now, drink it down, Ark. That'll soon chase that chill out of you.
I hope so. I say, Harry.
What is it? Something wrong?
No. It's just... There's that girl at the table over there by the door.
Oh, what about her?
Hey... She's very pretty. Almost beautiful. Doesn't she remind you of someone?
Oh, now you come to mention it, yeah. She looks rather like that little nurse who was looking after you at the hospital.
She doesn't remind you of anyone else?
No.
You never saw my mother, did you, Harry?
Why, no.
No, of course you couldn't have. She died so young. I just...
Oh, look. We've embarrassed the poor girl with our staring. She's getting up to leave.
No, I think not. She isn't going to leave.
You're right. She's coming our way. Hey, this is bad, fella.
Oh, pardon me, gentlemen, but you've been looking at me as if you recognized me.
Please accept our most humble apologies, madam.
Our behavior has been inexcusable.
Oh, no, please don't apologize. You see, well, I have such a poor memory for names, and I was afraid you might think me very rude.
You mean that...
I mean that I'm almost certain I've met you somewhere before, but I have to admit I can't remember your name.
My name is Ocularis.
Ocularis.
Yes, and my friend here is Harry Freeman.
I'm Clarice Dean.
Miss Dean?
Won't you have a drink with us?
Well, thank you, but I must go down to my cabin.
Then perhaps we can get together later on, Miss Dean?
That would be nice. Goodbye, gentlemen.
Au revoir.
Well, that isn't the strangest thing.
All ashore, it's going ashore. All ashore, it's going ashore.
Well, that's it, fella. Time for me to go.
Harry, Do you have to?
Goodbye, old fella, and take care of yourself.
Goodbye, Harry. Goodbye. So we meet again, Miss Dean?
Yes, Mr. Ocularis, we meet again.
Well, it was thoughtful of them to seat us together, wasn't it?
Yes. You're alone?
Yes, quite alone.
And you?
Yes, I'm on my own, too. Is this a pleasure trip for you, Mr. Ocularis?
Pleasure? No, no, not exactly. I'm convalescing. You see, I'm just out of the hospital after an operation. I was given up for dead. For 6 months, I've given myself up for dead. If you've ever been seriously ill, you'll know the feeling. That sort of posthumous feeling.
You don't look like an invalid.
Oh? You mean that? Really?
Of course.
Your soup, sir?
Thank you. Thanks, Stuart.
Do you think we'll have a good voyage, Stuart?
Well, madam, I don't like to be a Jeremiah, but...
What do you mean?
Well, you see, madam, maybe I shouldn't say it. There's a corpse on board, and I never yet knew a voyage with a corpse aboard that we didn't have bad weather.
Well, Stuart, you're just superstitious.
Oh, no, no, that's very ancient superstition, Miss Dean. Maybe it's true. With a corpse in the hold, perhaps some disaster may befall us. We may run into fog and icebergs. Remember the Titanic with the band playing Nearer My God to Thee on the afterdeck while she went down?
Oh, Mr. Ocularis, please.
And the Empress of Ireland with all those people trapped in the smoking room with only one door between themselves and life, and that door locked for the night by the deck steward and the deck steward missing. Oh, there
please,
are so many.
Please, you'll have to excuse me. I must go now.
Oh, I'm sorry. I bored you with my silly talk.
No, it's not that.
Well, then I'll see you in the lounge later on, perhaps?
Of course.
Mr. Ocularis. Mr. Ocularis.
Yes. Yeah, what? Where am I?
Safe in bed in your cabin. It's morning. I brought you your tea.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Steward.
By the way, sir, I suppose you haven't come across a bunch of keys here in your cabin.
Keys? Well, no. Why?
Well, mine are missing, sir. The ones that open the pantries and the freezers. I must have laid them down somewhere.
No, I'm sorry, but I'm afraid I haven't seen them, Steward.
Oh, well, I didn't really think you had, sir. Only I thought it wouldn't do any harm to ask.
Oh, no, of course not, and I do hope you'll find them.
Oh, they'll turn up sooner or later, so never fear.
Have you ever done any sleepwalking, Miss Dean?
No, I never have.
That's the funny part of it. I never had either until last night. Never in my life. I hardly ever even dream. So this really rather frightened me.
Tell me about it, Mr. Ocularis.
I dreamed at first that I was walking alone in a wide plain covered with snow. It was growing dark. It was very cold. My feet were frozen and numb, and I was lost. I came then to a signpost. At first it seemed there was nothing on it, nothing but ice. Just before it grew finally dark, however, I made out on it the one word... Polaris.
The pole star.
Yes, and it gave me, in the dream, I mean, an awful feeling of despair. And then the dream changed. I dreamed I was standing outside my stateroom in the little dark corridor and trying to find the door handle to let myself in. I was in my pajamas, and again, I was very cold. And at that point, I woke up.
Yes.
The extraordinary thing is, that's exactly where I was. And now the question is... Where had I been? It's very singular.
Certainly, yes. Do you think, Mr. Ocularis, that we might go into the lounge now? I find the darkness here on deck a little depressing.
Why, of course, Miss Dean. We'll go in and listen to the ship's orchestra. We'll listen to the orchestra in the lounge. Ah, good heavens, can I never escape from that horrible sentimental tune? The last thing I heard in America and the last thing I want to hear.
But don't you like it?
Well, when I heard it at the hospital, when was that? It made me feel like crying. Three old Italians tootling it there in the rain. Oh, I suppose like most people, Miss Dean, I'm afraid of my feelings.
I'm only a ship's doctor, Mr. Ocularis, and I don't pretend to know much about the workings of the human mind. But if you'll tell me about your dream, I think it may help to relieve your anxiety.
Last night was the second night in succession. It started with the engines. The rhythm of the engines became positively a persecution. It gave me no rest. It followed me like a hound of heaven. It drove me out into space and across the Milky Way, and then back home by way of Betelgeuse. It was cold there. I sparkled with frost. I felt like a Christmas tree. I was barefoot. There were icicles on my fingers and toes. Snowflakes and tinsel blew past me, and always the perpetual throbbing, the iteration of sound. It was like a pain. There were circles and repetitions of light, the feeling as of everything coiling inward to a center of misery.
Go on, Mr. Ocularis.
Suddenly, it was dark and I was lost. I was groping. I touched the cold, white, slippery woodwork with my fingernails, hunting for the electric light switch. The throbbing was again the throbbing of the ship's engines. And I was almost home. Almost home. Another corner to round, a door to be opened, and there I'd be, safe and sound. Safe in my father's home.
And that was the end of your dream?
Yes. It was at that moment I woke up. I was in the corridor that leads to the dining salon, and I was seized with such a pure terror as I had never known. My heart felt as if it would stop beating. My back was toward the dining salon, so apparently I had just come from it. I was in my pajamas. The corridor was dim. Thank heavens it was deserted. Not a soul. Not a sound, but the engines. I was only 50 yards from my stateroom, and I felt with luck I could get to it unseen. And I did. In a cold sweat, I crept into my bunk, and I lay there shivering and thinking, where have I been?
A nasty experience, no doubt, Mr. Ocularis.
You don't think it's anything serious, do you?
No. I'm sure it's nothing serious, Mr. Ocularis.
Miss Dean, Clarice, please, may I call you Clarice?
Of course you may, Mr. Ocularis.
Clarice, it happened again. It happened again last night.
I know.
What? Well, how do you know? Who told you?
No one told me.
Then
I saw you myself.
You? Saw me?
Yes. You see, last night, I was worried about you. I waited in the shadow near the door of your cabin. I saw you come back safely, and I thought it better not to interfere. I heard it's dangerous to interfere with sleepwalkers.
Oh, Clarice, if you could understand how it felt at that moment.
When you'd gone back into your cabin, I waited for a while and then came away. Just as I came to the corner of the corridor near the stairs, I noticed something on the floor. It seemed to me that you had dropped it.
What was it you found?
I have it here. Look.
A bunch of keys. No. No. No!
You stand for me, Captain?
Oh, yes, Steward. I understand you've lost some keys.
That's right, Captain. I've mislaid them somewhere.
I've reason to believe they're being used to no good purpose. Any idea who might have got hold of them?
Well, sir, I did think I might have laid them down in one of the staterooms, 27 on E deck, Mr. Ocularis.
Oh, I see.
He's been very ill, sir.
Yes, yes. I think it might be a good idea for you to keep an eye on that stateroom tonight. Do you see what I mean?
Yes, sir.
They're playing that thing again, Clarice. How can they do it to me? As if I hadn't enough to bear with my sleepwalking and the cold and the keys.
Hush, Mr. Ocularis. You really shouldn't let your mind dwell on your troubles, you know.
Well, how can I help it when every time I look at you, I think of her?
Of whom? Of whom do I remind you?
My mother. My very pretty and very wicked mother who died young. That's why I can't bear this tune. It brings back all the dreadful misery of those days.
She's been dead a long time?
Yes. Yes, I was 9 when she died.
And she was unhappy?
She was unhappy? Now, what on earth made you say that?
Why shouldn't I? Is there anything very extraordinary about it?
Yes, because somehow that had never occurred to me before, that she was unhappy. I've always thought of it the other way around, that she made us so unhappy, father and me.
Oh, I see.
She and my Uncle David, my father's younger brother. You see, I found out about them as children do. I was 9 that summer. One hot July morning, he came to her through the rose garden. I saw and heard everything. He had come to take her out on the yacht for the day. When she heard him, she came out on the balcony and they spoke words of love. And then Uncle David saw my head peeking out from behind the bush. They went off together on the yacht, but Uncle David was certain that sooner or later I would tell.
And you were only 9.
It was one of those things that stain the mind forever. My mother's face with the love in her eyes, the scene in the garden, the hurricane which followed. All my life I've been trying to make some sense of it.
Poor Mr. Ocularis.
It's queer how things get twisted.
It's almost as if I were to blame, as if I were guilty. The sin was hers and his. The Furies pursue me.
But you're not to blame. Don't you see? It's simply because you loved her.
Oh, how wonderfully understanding you are. Who but you would have thought she was unhappy? You know, Clarice, I'm years older than you, centuries older. But is it possible that we are falling in love?
Yes, I think it is, Mr. Oculus.
Take my hand, Clarice. Feel how cold it is.
Yes, poor thing.
Warm it. Warm it before I leave you. It's been to Polaris and back, you know. And tonight... tonight it may have to go again.
No. No. No.
Last night, Clarice, it was the same. Same dream of going round a star. Polaris, Betelgeuse, the same terrible coldness and helplessness. That awful whistling curve.
And when you woke up, where were you when you woke up? Tell me. Don't be afraid.
I was at the bottom of the stairway that leads down from the pantries to the hold, past the refrigerating plant. It was dark, and I was crawling on my hands and knees.
Oh, do you think?
I know, and so do you. Once more, and I'll be looking down into it. And there I will see myself.
Just a minute, Stuart. Let me get this straight. You kept watch outside Mr. Arcularis's cabin. He came out in his pajamas, and you followed him down to the big freezer room. He used your keys to unlock the doors along the way.
Yes, sir. When he got to the door of the big freezer room, he unlocked it and went in, and got down on his knees beside the coffin. Then he started to beat on him with his fists, sir.
How long did that go on?
Only a few moments, sir. Then he turned round and started back.
And you followed him back to his cabin?
Yes. When he got a few yards from the freezer door, he seemed to wake up like, and after that he fair ran back to his stateroom.
Well, I think I'd better have a word with Mr. Ocularis myself.
No, no, it can't be.
It is, Clarice, it is.
But how do you know? How do you know where the...
Don't be afraid to say it, my dear. You mean the coffin.
How could you know where it is?
I don't need to know, I suppose. You see, I'm already almost there.
Ah, yes, Mr. Oculus.
What do you want with me?
Well, there's a certain matter that I feel I really must discuss with you.
What do you mean? What is it?
Mr. Oculus... have you been sleeping well since you've been aboard this ship?
What are you driving at? Tell me, what are you driving at?
If you'll please answer my question, I'll explain.
No, I have a right to know what you're accusing me of.
But, my dear Arcularis, I'm not accusing you of anything. I'm simply
trying... Oh, yes, you are. You are accusing me of something, and I know what it is. I know what you're thinking.
But, my dear sir, I...
You think it was my fault that they drowned? You think my spying drove them to it? You think I was to blame for what happened?
Mr. Arcularis, you're entirely mistaken.
I'll tell you exactly what happened. The morning after he came to her in the garden. The morning after the hurricane. It was just before daybreak, and the bay was calm again. I rowed up the marsh channel towards Pulpit Rock. I knew that Mother and Uncle David had sailed that way in the yacht. I rowed about halfway up the channel when I saw the yacht's tender. It was still tied to the yacht. The yacht was sunk there, lying a little on her port side with the roof of the cabin about 2 feet underwater. I could see it all quite plainly. The cabin door was shut. I sculled around to the starboard side where I could look in through the forward porthole. Inside, I could see something pink floating close to the glass. I knew it was my mother's dress, the dress she'd worn the day before. That's all, sir. I didn't touch anything, sir. I left everything just as it was. Everything.
Mr. Oculus.
Yes.
I'm afraid you're not quite yourself this morning.
That's right. I do feel very weak. I have a pain around my heart.
You've been very ill, and we must take care of you. You've been walking in your sleep. It may not happen again, but if it does, I'm afraid you'll have to sleep in the ship's hospital.
Yes, yes, I understand.
Don't worry about anything, Mr. Aquilaris. We'll take care of you. You're going to be all right. You're going to be perfectly all right. So don't worry. Don't worry. Don't worry.
He told me not to worry, Clarice.
I'm sure he was right. There's nothing to worry about.
Oh.
Nothing at all.
Of course. We must be gay, Clarice. What would you say to some champagne?
That would be wonderful.
Steward! Steward! Champagne! Champagne! Bring us champagne! Oh, perhaps even now, my dear, it will all turn out to be nothing more than a nightmare from which we'll both awake.
If only that could be so.
The same as before. Just the same. The long, magnificent, delirious swoop of dizziness. The great circle. The swift pathway to Arcturus. All as before. But now infinitely more rapid. Never have I had such speed. Beyond the moon, past the North Star in a twinkling. Swooping in a long, bright curve round Pleiades. Hello there, old Betelgeuse. I'm off to the little blue star that points the way to the unknown. Forward into the untrodden. Courage, old man. In no time, we'll be back to Clarice. Back to Mother. Oh, if only I don't wake. If only I don't wake in that time and space, somewhere and nowhere, cold and dark. And music sobbing among the palms of a lonely... If only... The coffers of the poor. No, not coffers, not coffers, not coffers, but light. Delight, supreme white and brightness, and above all, whirling lightness above all, and freezing.
He's gone, Dr. Venner.
I know. I'm sorry, gentlemen. The patient is dead.
Gentlemen, you've had the privilege of watching Dr. Venner attempt one of the most delicate operations in all surgery. Unfortunately, the patient was unable to support the strain imposed by the administration of the anesthetic for a period long enough to enable Dr. Venner to complete the operation. That'll be all for today, gentlemen.
Well, that's that, my friend.
Poor devil.
What do you mean, poor devil? We've all got it coming to us, haven't we? He was lucky. He died under anesthetic. He didn't feel a thing.
Didn't he? I wonder.
You have heard Mr. Ocularis by Conrad Aiken, the second broadcast in a new dramatic series, NBC Presents Short Story. The adaptation was by Gerald Noxon. In tonight's cast, Ocularis was John Daner. Georgia Ellis was heard in the dual role of Miss Hoyle and Clarice Dean, Donald Woods as Dr. Mitchell and Ship's Doctor, and Jan Arvin as the Captain and Dr. Venner. Kurt was Lee Millar, John was Tom McKee, Harry was Don Randolph, and the steward was Charles Davis. Your announcer, Don Stanley. The director of NBC Presents Short Story is Andrew C. Love. Next week, the Hollywood scene, in the special idiom of F. Scott Fitzgerald. Mr. Fitzgerald's story, Crazy Sunday. Hear it next week. Meanwhile, bear in mind this message from the United States Marine Corps. The history of the United States Marine Corps is more than a glorious record of heroic deeds of valor. The history of the Marines is a history of men. Men whose faithful devotion to the ideals of their country and Corps have caused them to be honored and respected throughout the world. The proud traditions which set the Corps apart become a coveted heritage to every man who wears the globe and anchor. And the Marine motto, Semper Fidelis, always faithful, becomes a lasting creed.
You'll find leaders in government, industry, education, in every walk of life who proudly bear the mark of the United States Marines. There's something about the Corps which fosters leadership, self-reliance, and confidence among its members. In the final analysis, these are the qualities that make a good Marine and a good American. The following statement was received from General C.B. Cates, Commandant of the United States Marine Corps. With the annual appeal for funds by the Red Cross, every American can render a special service to someone less fortunate than himself. I urge all hands to be as generous in their support as their means will permit. This program came to you from Hollywood. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
By ship, by plane, by road, by human carriers. Goods are smuggled dangerously out of one country into another. Goods which are forbidden cargo. Revealing the inside story of The Black Book.
This is the spot, boys. Nice, quiet, deep part of the harbor I was telling you about. Lugged a no-good son of a sneaking right out of the auto.
Drag him by the shoulders, Mickey.
Those damn cement boots fit for size, huh?
For the last time, Charlie, you can't do this.
Hear that, fellas? You can't do this, he says. Listen, sneak rat. If you're the praying kind, start right now. Give a prayer of thanks that I'm a softie, that I'm only dumping you in a deep drink. Them cement boots you stuck with are heavy, so you'll drown fast and easy and stay on the bottom till you rot. Give a prayer of thanks I don't do to you what the boys did to the last undercover rat Narcotics Bureau sent to try to frame me.
Oh, you should have let us, boss. Dumping a cement load of guy ain't fun.
Hear that, punk? Alabama, he's disappointed. He wants to try out on you what he tries out on the other rat I talk about. You see, Alabama, he reads books. He reads about an old Chinese trick about 1,000 cuts. So what's he do? He figures he can bump a guy with 1,000 punctures from an ice pick. He only got to 90 before the crumb croaked.
This lung's bigger than the other. I could have topped 90.
Killing me, Charlie, it's as bad as killing a cop.
Get that, boys. Killing him's bad as killing cops, he says. Cops don't worry me none. They're like you undercover boys from Narcotics. Bunch of punks when you come up against me, Charlie Alberto.
Okay, boss. Let's do the job, get out of here. All them ships on the harbor gets me nervous. How we know some guys ain't watching us through glasses?
When I pick a spot, Alabama, I pick a spot,
Savvy?
Oh, sure, boy. Let's slide him over. Well, I want a drink.
Okay, is that time to pray?
Toss him in, boys.
Charlie, not me. Not me.
Yeah, you rat.
Charlie!
It was too quick for his breed, boss.
Next time, Alabama. Next one we catch, he's all yours.
Say, thanks, boss.
Let's go, boys.
I tell you, man, this outfit we're after, it's replaced without a doubt Murder Incorporated as the principal source of heroin east of the state line. On a conservative basis, we estimate its annual sales at about $3.5 million. You've seen the names of these narcotic smugglers in the Black Book. They're right at the top of the heap, far removed from the actual peddling of the forbidden cargo. For years now, they've hired others to run their risk for them. Our urgent problem is get evidence which will lead to their arrest and conviction.
I take it, sir, there's to be a change in our methods.
A change in methods, a change in a tech. We've worked out a new scheme. If it succeeds, fine. If it fails, well, I guess the boys in the Black Book can boast of having murdered a few more from this bureau. Undercover agent Max Rosen was found this morning.
Fine.
A man fishing from a deserted pier got his line caught and tugged it up. Had a piece of cloth on the hook. Fortunately, he showed intelligence, reported to the police. Rosen's feet had been cemented in a drum of concrete.
Any leads on the killer, sir?
Yeah, like everything else in this dirty game. Nothing but leads which vanish in thin air before they turn into solid evidence. But we feel if we concentrate on Charlie Alberto, otherwise known as Little Bullets, and get him, we've grabbed the top man. The rest will fall easily. But to get back to our proposed scheme, the broad strategy is this. Tomorrow, we're bringing in secretly from the Midwest an undercover agent who'll be known as Frankie Heimer. He'll check in at the Cosmo Hotel on Church Street and their establishment. Before we get into details, Frankie, let's have your report.
Well, naturally, I can't say for certain, but I've a hunch the small fry peddlers are looking me over carefully. I put out a couple of feelers to buy the stuff, saying I don't want adulterated, but pure. But I'll pay the ruling price.
You bought any yet?
No, sir. Boys are mighty careful. Don't forget I've only been here a week and, this East Harlem is sure a tough district.
Don't we know it? And the police. It's that Charlie Alberto. He rules the area with the worst bunch of hoods you'd find anywhere.
Yeah, he's certainly going to be hard to reach. I saw him yesterday, you know, in that flashy auto of his. Chrome trimmings all over, banks of fog lights, twin horns, backing lights. One of those nutty whip aerials.
Yeah. We only wish he'd have a fatal accident with his auto. Save the taxpayers a lot of money. Us a lot of trouble. That's Charlie. Drive around in the biggest flashy car and presses the mob and morons.
He's a pudgy-looking guy. Reminds me of a snub-nosed bullet.
That's why they call the punk Little Bullets. Tell me, you get the names of any of the peddlers showing interest?
Well, there's one I'm trying to cultivate, a creep by the name of Tony Gazzardo. Tall, dark, thin, cadaverous guy. So I'd expect to find as a charnel house attendant.
Tony Gazzardo.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of Charlie's runners, but cunning. Very cunning. I can't ping a thing on him that'll stick. Strictly a vicious hood.
I concentrate on him?
Yeah. Now, who else you got to know? Give me their names.
Oh, let's see. There's Mibbs Callahan. Barney Gondoff, Detroit Paul, Johnny Strassnider. Oh, yeah, and the one I've just met called the Clinic Kid.
And we know the whole pack. All in the Black Book. You've worked fast, Frankie. Only hope it hasn't been too fast.
Oh, no, I don't think so. No, I've let dribble around the district, but Things got too hot for me over in the Midwest, but I still got my clients, and I'll buy good stuff. Oh, I play it, Itchy. They're still standing off, conning me carefully.
All right. How do you feel about putting the second strategy into operation?
Suits me. Provided your boys don't play it too well.
We'll watch it, but it's got to be convincing. At least bruises.
Oh, okay. I guess I've been beaten up by tougher boys.
But never officially, eh?
Not yet.
Good man.
Okay, when's it to be?
I'll leave that to you. You know the way these animals are looking at you.
Uh-huh. Well, I say let it be as soon as possible.
Tomorrow?
Fine.
Where shall we pick you up for questioning?
Oh, say 2 o'clock at a gas station in the South Bronx. Corner Willis Avenue, 140th Street.
Perfect. I'll send Dick Both, Rod Clark, and Bern Frizzell. They're 3 officers well hated in that part of the Bronx.
Yeah, I don't think I know them.
They know you by sight. I'll brief them in the morning.
Who else are you picking up?
To make the whole affair look on the level, we'll spring a mass raid. Pick up, bring in for questioning the ones you mentioned. Callahan, Strasnyder, Paul, the clinic kid, and say about 8 or 9 others.
Uh-huh. How's it to be handled?
We grab them all up around the same time as we snatch you. They'll be brought to narcotics headquarters on Broadway. Now, here's the angle. You'll be herded together on the 5th floor.
Yeah.
My boys look you over, cite you as their latest suspect, take you in a room for questioning. Others will take most of the rest into the room across the corridor.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be left hanging around under guard near the room in which we've got you. Now, the door of that room will be left open, just enough so they can hear our questions, your answers.
That's fine.
We'll pretend to get exasperated with you. You're stubborn. Mm-hmm. You're not exactly sneering, but you're defiant. We try everything to make you break, but you don't.
I see. I've got to put on an act to convince the peddlers I'm solid, that I can be trusted. Huh?
That's it. It's the only way we can figure out how to get you trusted by them completely. Once you're accepted, play it cagey until you're dealing with the big boy himself, Charlie Alberto. Now, anything you're not clear on?
No, I've got it. Your men will know the car I'll be in.
Yeah, they'll bring it in for searching.
Oh, yeah.
Our mechanics say they'll need only a couple of hours to fix up the boot, to rearrange the back seat so that Roland can fit in without too much cramp.
It's going to be a little hard on his legs.
Roland's the best stenographer in the bureau, a trained observer. We feel he's the man to supply the corroborating evidence we need. In other words, once you've been accepted as trustworthy by the dope peddlers, you're to do all business with them in your car.
I see.
Roland will overhear their conversation with you, record it by shorthand, transcribe it, and you both sign it.
Both sign it. How about his ability to identify?
The mechanics are fitting in your car a concealed arrangement of small mirrors in such a way that wherever a peddler's standing outside or sitting inside your car, Roland will see his face.
Yeah, that's neat.
One other thing. We've got hold of a small commercial truck fitted out with cameras, complete with telescopic lenses and things like that. Now, where you drive, the truck tails.
Yeah.
Don't worry. That truck's so made it can change its appearance faster than a chorus girl.
That's better. Oh, all right, sir. I guess that's enough, huh?
Sure. See you tomorrow after 2 at headquarters. In the interrogation room.
Yeah. Oh, tell the boys not to mess me up too much, huh?
Only enough to make it look convincing, eh? Well, good luck.
Hey, this joint gives me the creeps.
Yeah, they got the clinic kid in a long time.
Hope he don't sing, Tony.
If he does, he can't do much.
I sure putting the heat on that Frankie Heimer.
Yeah. See, Alabama, I seen him around, wanted to do business, but I thought...
Watch your mouth, Tony. You want to...
I told you like a million times, you can't make a case.
Listen,
on me, and I'll never help you make a case
Frankie
on anybody
up
else. I go, ooh! You could kick my teeth in, but I ain't talking. I ain't gonna help.
All right. Let the punk go. But I'm warning you.
You're warning me. Look at me, I'm all scared into a twitch.
Get out of here. Beat it back to the gutter.
So long, fellas. Next time, pick on a guy you can scare.
Say, Tony, there goes the kind of guy little bullets could use.
Yeah. Think we ought to pass the word on to the boss he's okay. Charlie said to look out for new business, and that Frankie's it.
District Supervisor Willard. Who made the contact, Frankie? Tony Gazzardo in Alabama, huh? That's fine. Yes, Roland's been standing by for the last week. And the truck waiting the green light from you. When's the deal? Yeah. That's fine. I'll have Roland in position 15 minutes from now. Contact me if the deal comes off. Fine. Good luck. The green light, Roland.
Frankie make contact?
Just phoned. According to what he can figure, our little stunt last week, letting some of Charlie Alberto's boys overhear us grilling him, is showing signs of dividends.
Well, let's hope we'll get the sons of sin this time.
Don't work up a sweat. Let the ball bounce, but don't miss a word. Don't miss a syllable. Shorthand down everything said by Frankie and every guy who speaks to him. And make sure you get a good look at their faces.
I'll watch it close.
I don't have to tell you we're relying on you.
I meet Frankie where, sir?
Well, what do you feel about locking you in the compartment, Roland?
Safer. Can't tell if one of the dopers will get a sudden idea to look inside.
Okay. Look, if anyone does ask why it's locked, I'll tell them it's been locked for months and I lost the key. Never worried about it.
That should pass. Well, I'm ready.
Okay.
Why have I got such long legs?
Don't worry, I'll drive around the pumps.
You'd better. One thing. The weather's cool. Okay, Frankie. Lock up and let's go.
Hi, Frankie.
You're a minute late, Alabama.
So what, pal? You the boss around these parts?
Okay. Ain't got all day to sit around. I get the figure, maybe I'll do business elsewhere.
Oh, no. Ain't that a no good mouth of words to say to a pal?
You got the stuff on you?
Man, you sure are impatient.
5 ounces will do for a start. If it's pure enough, I'll be in a big way.
$350 an ounce, Frankie.
Okay, I got it. You got it?
Uh-uh.
You giving me the runaround, Alabama?
You're all right, Frankie. Me and Tony, we was up there, too, the day they grilled us all. You did fine.
Now listen, pal, and listen good. I'm used to dealing with a big brain, not with peanut-headed sidekicks.
Frankie, some guys use a gun. Some use a knife. Know something? I'm different, Frankie. I use an ice pick. If I don't hate a guy, I stab once. If I really hate a guy, I stab 90 times. And ain't he glad to hand in his checks?
I won't do business with you. Where's Charlie?
Hey, it's funny you ask that. I'm here to pass on that Charlie wants to meet you before we make a deal.
Well, why didn't you say instead of doing a samba on your gums? Okay, now where I find him?
Around 6, look for his car. He'll pull into this filling station for gas. Get his okay and we do a deal.
I'll be here. Tell Charlie don't be late.
You kidding?
How are you?
All right, Charlie.
Come over to my car. Let's talk.
Must I?
That's the way I like it.
Okay.
I don't like getting out of my car, Frankie.
Suits me. Alabama tell you?
5 ounces. 350.
High grade?
Highest there is.
It's a deal. Get the money ready. 1750.
Meet Tony tomorrow. Round 11.
For what?
For the stuff.
Oh, don't you trust me, Alberto?
It's from 11 tomorrow. At 82nd Street and Columbus Avenue. So long, Frankie.
Would you say Charlie's onto us, Frank?
I don't know, sir. Unless that's his psychology, sitting in his flashy car, order people to go to him, not the other way around.
It could be that, sir. Alabama showed no hesitation in leaning half in our car.
Yeah, it made me half jump out of my skin. Suddenly appeared as if out of the ground.
You saw him clearly, Roland?
Yes, unfortunately.
Listen, did you notice in Roland's notes Alabama's boast about the ice pick?
I noticed it. When we found our man full of holes as a coffee strainer, both the homicide boys and ourselves weren't 100% sure it was a smuggler's killing. We figured it could have been done by a maniac, some psycho in a blood frenzy.
Yeah. Alabama mentioned the figure 90.
And that's why, if and when we get Charlie Alberto, we're pulling in Alabama. Let the cops work on hooking him to the murder. Did I say if and when? I should say if we get Alberto or not.
Then there's Max Rosen.
I know, I know.
Look, listen, how do you say we try this? I meet Tony Gazzardo, complete the deal, arrange for another in, oh, say, 2 days' time. I tell him then my clients weren't satisfied with the heroin's quality, that he sold me short. That's why I demand a talk with Charlie Alberto.
And you see Charlie?
Yeah, I can't get out of my car. I got drunk, fell downstairs, chipped a bone on my ankle. I got my foot and ankle wrapped up in gauze. On the seat with me is a pair of crutches. Well, what's the reaction?
Though Charlie is clearing at least $2 million a year running in forbidden cargo, information has it he's money hungry.
Could you send word that you're in the market for a really big deal, say 20 ounces?
That's $7,000.
Yeah, well, if it's cash on delivery, it's my guess that his money hunger will overcome his vanity. Probably fall out of his chrome chariot to snatch the greenbacks.
If he does, you witness it, Roland. Record the talk, and the boys in the truck manage to photograph the whole thing. Yes. With that corroborating evidence, Charlie could hire the smartest attorney in the States, and our charges would still stick.
Provided he doesn't insist on making the meet at night, some dark spot.
Mm. And if he does, Frank?
He's been known to operate after that.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, provided it's a cash deal.
Well, what's another risk?
If you can pull it off in daylight, if Charlie makes the delivery personally, Roland records, truck photographs, we've got him, and we can wrap up the case.
I'll stick with it, even if I have to take smelling salts to whip those gas fumes in the boot.
Provided Charlie Alberto trusts me.
Now you get this, Tony. You go tell Charlie he's caused me a lot of trouble. Tell him those 5 ounces weren't high grade. Someone had adulterated them. There was 200 grains short.
Sure, sure, Frankie. Quit your beefing. When Charlie slapped me around, you got complaints, you tell him yourself.
Yeah, you figure I got nothing to do but chase the knuckle brain all over Harlem?
Take your foot off the gas, Frankie. Nobody don't call a little bullets nothing but respectful names around here.
Okay. Then you line up a meet for me and your boss. If he's caught any idea, tell him I got 7,000 greenbacks to bust on a deal. And if it's stuff high grade, then a 7 grand's only peanuts to what's coming up.
Say, you sure got some swell clients, Frankie.
None but the best. That's why I ain't friendly with any punk who tries to shortchange. Now beat it. You tell Charlie fix a meet for tomorrow afternoon, 3 o'clock. Tell him to bring 20 ounces pure and a 7 grand's in his pocket. Tell him we meet right here.
Sure. Sure, I'll tell him, Frankie.
Nice work, Frank. 3 o'clock. I checked with the Met boys. They promised the weather tomorrow afternoon at that time will be cold but clear. Strong light.
I sure hope nothing slips. Charlie or his killer punks catch on of us. Now flowers, by request.
This time, leave the rear compartment unlocked. Should there be trouble, Roland can help. Pack shoulder holsters. But if you do use your guns, don't shoot to kill. We want these boys alive. To make them wish they were dead. Good luck.
Hi, Frankie. The bus says come on over.
Next.
Charlie says... Say, what's that?
A crutch, you blind. See my foot and ankle? I got drunk last night, fell on some blasted stairs, chipped my ankle bone.
Yeah? Got much pain, Frankie?
Yeah. Turns white out if I got to use a crutch. Oh, you tell Charlie, will you? And tell him I got a $7,000.
Gee, you ain't going to like it, but... Sure, dirty luck about your ankle.
Look, I ain't got all afternoon to wait around.
Sure. I'll go tell the boss.
Hi, Frankie. Oh.
Holy Saints, Alabama.
Davis. Just want to check.
Okay.
Hey, you must be top boy around here, Frankie. Charlie's coming over.
You got the stuff?
Ask him. Hey, I ever show you my ice pick?
Nah, go chip yourself a hunk.
You go careful. I don't figure you a hunk of ice.
What's this about you busting your ankle?
Nah, look for yourself.
Tony.
Us?
You take a look.
You touch my ankle and I jab your eyes. I'm going through enough Hades with it as it is.
Sure, but...
Charlie, tell him to back up. If I want to do business, I'm blow.
Hey, why the uproar, Frankie?
$7,000 burning my pants.
All right, boys, forget it. It's a deal, Frankie. 20 ounces high grade for you. 7 goes for me.
It's a deal, Charlie.
This is Willard, New York District Supervisor, Narcotics Bureau. Thanks to our cold-nerved undercover agent we call Frankie Heimer, our scheme to get Charles Alberto succeeded. This man, who topped the international list of narcotics violators, realized his defense was hopeless, entered a plea of guilty, was sentenced from 5 to 10 years in Bronx County Jail. His associates received sentences up to 8 years, but not Alabama. He finally confessed to murder, died in the electric chair.
The story you have heard is factual. Names have been changed to protect the identities of those concerned. Listen again for another exposé of those who deal in forbidden cargo.